You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, the third hour of Wake Up Tucson, the dreaded third hour. Let's see. Got a listener, a guy who shot up the GOP office in Bullhead City, also attacked a Trump supporter in New Hampshire in February. Interesting.
Are we appalled? Are we appalled yet?
Not appalled at that.
Not appalled.
We're only appalled at things that happen to non-Republicans and other parts of the that not in our city.
We're appalled at.
Yeah. Anything that happens under our watch, they go, what?
What?
What happened, bro?
Ortega's on Billy today. So how do you like... Dear Mr. Ortega, how did you like that Lane Santa Cruz led the charge to ignore your budget, recommendations?
The rookie, okay? The new council person is going to tell the city manager how to run the business of the city. Rahina's little girlfriend.
Coming up very soon, we have Professor Anne-Marie Knott from Washington University, St. Louis, and she's going to walk us through her presentation of why you're probably not going to get COVID. And when I say us, I mean myself, Ed, and Major Mayhem, Sean McCluskey, Rincon Ventures. Sean, greetings and salutations, amigo.
Good morning, sir. I need to calm you down a little bit. You're all fired up.
Well, you're just the man to do it. Yeah.
I'm going to stoke the flames a little bit. This is going to be fun.
What's on the top of your mind right now before we get to our professor in the next segment? What do you got for me?
In all honesty, Sonoran Brunch Company went there Saturday, and Brian King and crew absolutely killed it. And thanks to the blessing, I had to get cookies, and the cookies they sell are ridiculous. It was a bourbon, brown sugar, maple, chocolate chunk, and pecan, I believe it was.
Wow.
And it was just ridiculous.
Sean, where is Sonoran Brunch Company for people who don't know?
22nd and Wilmont, right there in the old Kolb. I was thinking of Chef Chic in the old other building right over there. So, I mean, the East Side's really come a long way in the last few months, and we've got some great restaurants on the East Side. I'm not on the East Side a lot, but I'm picking them off one by one, and I had told Kenny I would go see him, and I hadn't, and I got the Papa's Gordo because it kind of fit me because I'm getting a little chunky right now. And the crispy potatoes with the melted cheese and green chilies in between the perfectly crusted potato on both sides. And then I got the carne asada over the top. Ashley got the chorizo and egg quesadilla. You know how you like your pizzas with that good brown caramelization over the top, where you want your tortillas to have some like good char to it?
Yes.
These were perfectly charred.
I feel like in the last, so think about this, in the last, you know, year or so, right, and that kind of South Central corridor was not unbelievable in that food area, right, but other than like maybe Raina at Shish Kebab, right? So I got Wendy at Wilmot and 22nd, Kenny at Sonoran Brunch, I got Raina on Wilmot and Broadway, and then I got Ben at Wilmot and Speedway.
And down the street, you got Fire and Smoke.
That's true. So that's the Wilmot Kolbish corridor is kind of happening right now.
It is a fat kid favorite for sure.
Maybe we should call it Fat Kid Fave Avenue instead of Wilmot. That's what we're going to do.
Might work that way.
So Sean, we'll talk about it a little more. The city council had $90 million plus to play with from the feds for COVID stuff, and it's like they ignored, even Kozachik, your buddy, our buddy, really, was a little perturbed that they literally ignored Ortega and went with the Lane Santa Cruz recommendations for the 90 mil.
Because it feels good. It's not about what's right. It's about what feels good. It's about that warm, fuzzy, oh my goodness, look at me moment. And you nailed it earlier with Dingbat and Ding Dong going up on the, going with the Minnesota thing, the chief and the mayor. They both had sensationalism all over it. Nothing about what matters here locally. Everything that, oh, look at me moment. That's all it is. It's a, oh, look at me moment. There's no political leadership. It's just sensationalship.
So this is a Rahina line. And I want you to think about how she gutted the cops for a decade. quote, our budget is a moral document. Through this plan, we're making it loud and clear what we believe is the best investment we can make in our community.
She said that when they hired the chief.
No, she said this.
You said earlier, he's the best guy for the job. He's the worst guy for the job. Morale is the lowest it's been on the police force. Not if you were to poll his officers, his ground troops, it's 60-40 against.
Oh, of course. No, the cops are the cop morale is in the toilet.
You know, you can have a great coach and a good team and have a great team at the end of the day. But if you have a great team, because we had a great team in TBD, we've got a horrible coach. So therefore, now we've got a mediocre team.
One of the listeners, after listening to their lines from about the Minnesota thing and about, you know, cops and stuff like that, they said, what will go unreported in the light of the mayor and the chief's comments, dozens of TPD officers again have updated their resumes and will be scheduling interviews with other police departments as soon as possible.
And that's an absolute fact.
Yeah. All right, Sean.
I mean, for decades, we had to do fundraising to have the people buy the bulletproof vest because TPD wouldn't take care of their own. So, excuse me, Regina, go vomit somewhere else with your words, because that's all you really did. You just did word vomit, and you didn't do anything that had actually meaning behind it.
I forgot about you're right. We used to do so much work with the Tucson Police Foundation, right, to buy the basics that the city wouldn't pay for anymore.
The Kevlar vest.
Couldn't.
So Rahina didn't want to pay for Kevlar vests for cops.
Nope.
To keep them safe. But then yet, like you said, two days ago, where the gentleman got shot in the belt. He happens to be a good friend of mine. Thank God he didn't get hit anywhere else. But, you know, otherwise he would have left his daughter childless, and she doesn't give a damn about that. She cares about the headline.
Correct. Yes, Ed, before we go to break.
My money quote from this whole story from the Star this morning was Lane Santa Cruz proposes the different plan than the Mike Ortega, the city manager who would know better, right? Saying we can no longer ignore the structural barriers that have resulted in pervasive economic, health, and racial disparities in our system.
Thank you.
We have to act, and we have to act now. What the hell does that have to do with COVID-19?
You have. Well,
it's all about racism.
Well, it's
racial disparity and the feel good portion.
You have a city.
People are running amok.
Rookie ideologues are running your city.
This is what's happening.
So,
telling the city manager who knows the numbers to go away.
Taxes. That's all I'm going to say. There comes a new sales tax. They've never seen one they haven't liked.
When we come back, Sean and I are going to be talking to Professor Anne-Marie Knott from Washington University, St. Louis, on her presentation, Why You Are Not Going to Get COVID-19. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. All right. We don't want to scare Dr. Knott with too much hair metal
it's
on this Friday.
Big hair rock and roll day.
I know. 8:19 in the morning at Alexander Christie Simone. Sean McCluskey's here. Let's give a big Wake Up Tucson welcome to Dr. Anne-Marie Knott, Washington University, St. Louis. Dr. Knott, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate your having me on.
So I was looking at your official page on the website here, and it says, this interest stems from issues arising during earlier career in defense electronics at Hughes Aircraft Company.
Yes, I spent lots of time in Tucson.
So tell me about your Tucson. Tell us about your Tucson time.
So I was working in a California facility in Canoga Park. We were developing a missile, and the production line was in Tucson. So I would come down for about 3 weeks at a time during the summer, once every 2 months or so, to as we worked on the line.
And what is your you're a professor in the business school at Washington?
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be a long story, but while I was working at Hughes, I started working on my PhD with the thought that I would teach at UCLA or USC at night. But then when they moved our entire group to Tucson, I said, you know, I'd like the beach, and so I stayed put.
Yeah, going from the beach to Tucson in the summer is not that much of a trade-off. We're going to you guys for the beach. Well, not this summer, we're not. It's a little crazy over there.
Right. The beach is still closed, actually.
So give me the process of, you did this presentation on, I think, May 12th about why you're not going to catch COVID. As a professor in the business school, what led you down the path to do that presentation?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought you might ask that question. So it started when the CARES Act was implemented. Our public, our PR folks asked a few of us to put together a piece on what we thought the impact was, and that started me down the rat hole. We're looking at $3 trillion. That's going to choke off a lot of spending or else raise our taxes. My primary interest is in R&D spending. So, we only spend about $127 billion a year on that. So this was whatever. I should be able to multiply, right? 20 times that?
Yeah, thank you. So you're talking about the impact, but then how did you get into the idea of now the theme of this is why you're not going to get COVID?
Oh, okay. So yes, that makes sense. So then I start digging, right? I said, why are we spending this much money? And the reason we were spending this much money is we thought 2.2 million people are going to die in the United States. And then I said, well, why did they think it was 2.2 million when it looks like it's 120,000? So the basic talk, is me going down that rat hole. Kind of the bottom line from that is that it looks like, 2.1 million of that was forecast error. And, 1 million of that was the intervention. And I think people think that, 2.2 million down to 120,000 is actually the benefit of interventions, all hail interventions. And I'm saying, no, let's step back and see what was really going on.
So the
analysis is really trying to tease apart forecast error from the real impact of intervention.
What I found amazing about your presentation is you say basically that the doom and gloomers from Imperial College and other places somehow ignored the factor that there's going to be a certain portion of the population that will just be immune to COVID, to the coronavirus, correct?
Yeah, and in their defense, at one point that was, you can't forecast what you can't see, right? You only have data on what you do see, right, which was the COVID cases. So it's not surprising. But what was surprising to me was that before the report was released, there was actually this natural experiment on board the Diamond Princess. People in the health agency in Japan were collecting daily data on how many COVID cases there were. And a group of researchers in China estimated the R-naught. And I don't want to go down the R-naught path too long, but they estimate, so an R-naught is the captures the rate of transmission of a disease.
Right.
And they estimated it to be very close to the estimate that Imperial College had. And I'm just going to throw the number out. It was 2.3. Imperial College's best guess was 2.4. But what's really fun in this study is that they generated that estimate and they said, okay, now let's forecast forward how many new cases we're going to see for the next 10 days.
Right.
And at the end of those 10 days, we see that they're already off by a factor of two. So that's what should have caught people's attention. That's when we started to see, that there was a piece of the puzzle that we were missing.
So talk about the, because you had the Diamond Princess in your presentation, then the USS Teddy Roosevelt, different populations. One's, of course, was probably 50 years younger average age, I think. But tell me about, tell me why those were like true living Petri dishes that we should have been paying attention to more.
Oh, well, what you want in a Petri dish is you want a case where COVID has had an opportunity to completely play out. And there's debate about whether it actually had the opportunity to fully play out. I went through the data I could find online, and it appeared we had pretty complete data on both of those ships. So we knew how many people, we knew not only how many people caught COVID, we also knew how many people didn't catch COVID. So rather than just looking at the trees, the COVID cases, we were able to see how big the forest was.
So what did we learn about from the Diamond Princess and the USS Teddy Roosevelt about how many people didn't catch COVID? Because I never thought about this. The population density of an aircraft carrier with 4,500 people is 1 million people, humans, per square mile.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So 14 times the size of Manhattan, 90 people living in your house. So it's pretty hard to socially distance in those settings. The advantage of the cruise ship rather than the aircraft carrier is that they have room, so they can isolate. But in the presentation, I have a picture of the burrs for sleeping in the aircraft carrier, and they sleep three up and no very little space in between them. So I lost my train of thought talking about.
No, we were talking about. Tell me about how many in relation. So what did we learn is how many people didn't catch?
Yeah. So in the I will update the estimates, but in the Diamond Princess, it was 80% of people, and 81% of people didn't catch COVID. And in the case of the cruise ship, I believe it was 83% didn't catch COVID. Since that time, the Stars and Stripes has updated the number of sailors who caught COVID, so it's now up to 23%. But in both cases, less than 75% then.
So I guess what we're saying is whatever's in the makeup of the human beings in both of these areas, there was a 70% plus of them had some sort of natural resistance to COVID-19.
Yeah, and I think that's really exciting. And I can't...
that's encouraging, right?
That's what I think. Honestly, because if we actually understand the mechanism through which we have this natural immunity, and okay, all your listeners should understand that I have absolutely no background in epidemiology. So I'm going way out on a limb here. But that's where I would like people to be investigating. There appears that there might be some kind of natural immunity to other forms of coronavirus, like SARS and MERS, common cold. But I can't answer the question about whether that's true or not. That's the kind of thing that infectious disease researchers would be looking at. And maybe they are. I just am not seeing it in the press. And I wish we would be. Because if we can actually understand that mechanism, then we can develop a test for this natural immunity,
which
is far more effective than testing people for the disease itself. Because once they will test positive for the disease, they already have it.
Right.
So that's not going to be effective in the workplace.
So what I love about the quote, because people, this is a very political issue right now. It's not a public health issue.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah. when you come up with using these numbers, right, and the people who want to keep the misery going, right, they keep saying she's not an epidemiologist, it's not peer-reviewed, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why is it that someone who's an educated and intelligent can't extrapolate the numbers and explain them in a way that has to be peer reviewed by your buddies? I don't get that.
Well, nothing out there has really been peer reviewed, just because that process takes time. But
right.
I don't understand why it's necessary. Well, it's a legitimate concern, right? Take with suspicion anything that isn't peer reviewed. Absolutely. In fact, people have already found a mistake that I made. I'm upfront about that mistake. And posted underneath my video, what the revision actually is. But the whole intervention was triggered by a report that itself wasn't peer reviewed.
Right. So, Dr. Knott, can I have you hold on for one more segment, please?
Sure, of course.
Awesome. We're hanging out with Dr. Anne-Marie Knott, Washington University, St. Louis. If you have a question or comment, 790-2040. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice. 8:35 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Sean McCluskey's here, Rincon Ventures, and he's helped me out this hour. And we have Dr. Anne-Marie Knott, Washington University in St. Louis. And she did a presentation a couple weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, called Why You're Not Going to Get COVID-19. Now, Sean, I know you have a question for Dr. Knott, but I have one. A listener wants us to clarify, Dr. Knott, and welcome back, is we're talking about when you looked at the numbers on the Diamond Princess and the Teddy Roosevelt, that we're saying that there what it seems to be is 70% plus of the people on those controlled populations have some sort of natural immunity to COVID. Is that what we're saying?
I don't understand the question.
He wants to clarify it.
Yes. Okay, that's and thanks for the opportunity to clarify it. Yes. So if you actually believe that the virus had a chance to fully populate throughout the ship, the two ships,
right,
then what you can do is say you would conclude that 70%+ of the people have some form of natural immunity. Okay, you can debate whether the disease had a chance to fully propagate. You can debate whether they actually were able to, isolate. But if under those premises, that's what you would conclude. But let me say some other people have interested. I've gotten emails from people saying, "Oh, well, we've got some other petri dishes, and we've got different experiences." So let's be upfront about that. So I just read this morning or yesterday that there was a ship in Antarctica where they found that 50% of the people caught COVID. So in that setting, it appears that, you know, there's only 50% resistance, which I think is interesting. I think other people view that as my being wrong about the other ships, and which is you should. I mean, that's an explanation, a feasible explanation.
Right.
You know, as a scientist, I would say, well, maybe we should be looking at what's different in these settings, the two settings that I looked at, versus the, you know, this Antarctica ship. And one thing that's different is that it's in, you know, a very cold climate.
Correct.
So
let's go to Sean has a question for you. Sean, you're on with you're here. Sean, Dr. Knott.
She hit both of my thing. How are you doing? Great information. I'm with you. I don't think you're going to catch it. But the question from the caller nailed the one thing. It's a small segment, 75% or less that you're going to get that you're going to get it. What was the transfer rate? What was the survivability rate is the more important question, because even if you do get it, what is the likelihood of two things? Number one, you're going to end up on a ventilator. Number two, you have no pre-existing condition. And I guess the third part of that is, are you going to die?
That's a lot of questions. I like that.
Yeah. The problem, what we know from the one ship, I mean, the sailors, one died. It was a chief petty officer. He's 41 years old. In the case of the other ship, I believe it was, I'm not looking at it, unfortunately. It was 9 people that died, I think. Is that right?
I think that's 9. I think you're right.
But the cruise ship average age, a little higher than the average age of a U.S. military ship.
Oh, much. Yeah. 19, you know, the average age was 69. The average age on aircraft carriers, 19.
So talk about your contrast with Sweden and L.A. County. Similar populations, different weather climate, but also much different ways they handled it. Give us a little contrast of Sweden and L.A. County.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So as I'm going down, I'm trying to tease different things apart. So the ships told us one thing about natural immunity, but that didn't tell us anything about whether interventions work or not. So the ships just told us what happens in the case that you don't have interventions. I said, okay, well, what are the interventions actually doing? So I said, Sweden has a very lax environment that keeps getting held up in the media as, you know, as the standard for lax COVID regime. LA is very strict. It's more strict than California, which is more strict than the U.S. as a whole. And I said, so let's compare them. You can't just say how many people in California, you know, how many people in LA County get it relative to Sweden, because they have, you know, they have different densities. But what you can do is you can control for that. So what I did was I took every single city in Sweden and I took every single city in Los Angeles County. And for each of them, identified their density and identified the number of COVID cases per 1,000 people. And I, you know, I plotted them, and then, you know, I did some formal regression, but it's kind of meaningless. But the difference was that in LA County, at sparse densities, the chance of getting COVID, the number of COVID cases, not chance of getting COVID, the number of COVID cases was 1 per 1,000. In the case of Sweden, it was 2.3 per 1,000. So what that suggested was that COVID, the COVID interventions were decreasing the cases by about a factor, you know, in half, basically. So they are effective.
Well, they're effective a little bit, right?
That was my point. So we're not going from the 810,000 cases, the 810,000 cases that, yeah, sorry.
Sean.
My thing is this. You said originally 2.1 million people were estimated to die. 120 or 100,000 people have so far died, but what you just stated there.
Not 120 have so far died. That was the consensus forecast of how many would die. And the original forecast was 2.2 million.
Okay, but based on what you just said, current deaths in the United States are how many?
Current deaths now in the U.S.
100,000.
So if we did nothing and didn't shut down the economy, we'd have 200,000 deaths based on Sweden versus L.A. County.
Yes.
So for the normal flu season deaths, we shut down the entire world.
Yes.
Now, So the other question, so in your presentation, did I see it right that instances of flu have increased during the quarantine time?
Yeah, well, that's not instances of flu. That's actually deaths from flu.
Okay.
The goal of that was just to say this takes you down the R-naught rabbit hole. But when I went to major scientists in the United States, and I said, look, this stuff doesn't make sense. we're doing something wrong here, and what I see is that we're saying that the R-naught for COVID is 2.4. How can that be if the R-naught for flu is 1.3? Because we see 50 million flu cases in the U.S. each year, and we're only seeing 1.5 million COVID cases.
Now, here's a weird thing. I went to go back to YouTube to find the presentation.
I know.
They took it down
this morning. Yeah. I don't know who took it down. I sent it, it was hosted on the school site, so I contacted the school to find out if we had taken it down. So I don't want to go down the conspiracy
path. I don't either, but when you find out, please email us, because I'd love to know about it. So please tell us, when you were talking to my, you were emailing with my wife, Lisa, who got you on the show, you were talking about some updates you had.
And again, now I'm going to go into epidemiology world and infectious disease world, but there's a study in Science that just came out in Cell, and it seems to be saying that, I'm trying to find my note here, I should have had this in front of me, but it seemed to be saying that 40 to 60% of subjects in their study who hadn't been exposed to COVID actually exhibited some kind of T cell response to it.
Okay.
Which seemed to me to be suggesting that that was a mechanism for natural immunity.
Is he on the phone or is it?
Yeah, I only have two lines, so I can't put three people on.
That's all fine. I
can't put them on, so I have to write it down. Barney wants to know how many. If anybody knows, the COVID-19 deaths were questionable. We find out later that they reclassified them.
Oh, okay.
Do we have that number? I mean,
that's changing on a daily basis.
Right.
So yeah. I don't think.
And I go to there's people want to track what's happening with deaths. There's a CDC site that reports weekly death by all causes. And I can get you the URL. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I've been tracking that because one of the things that people have been asking, and it's a reasonable question, is are COVID tests excess deaths, which is a term that's getting used, or are the people dying from COVID people who would be dying from the other disease that have shown up in their comorbidities? And so far, there isn't evidence of that.
And then a question, listen, they want to know if how do they contact you email-wise? What's a good email for them to send you an email, one of the listeners?
So the school email, not KNOTT at WUSTL.edu. So Washington University, St. Louis is what it's abbreviated for.
And are you going to continue down the rabbit hole on this? Is it too much of a headache? Are you getting hammered out there? What's going on?
Yes, it's very stressful. You have to, before I went out there, I said, okay, I'm going to be, I don't know what I'm talking about, first of all, right? I'm in a domain that I know, that I have no expertise in, epidemiology. I think this is important enough that if I look stupid, I'm going to bear that cost. But, at least it will open doors, so will people start investigating these questions. I keep saying, okay, after I do today's radio show, I'm not going to do it anymore. something will nag at me. And I already found something in the death data today that's going to keep me down the rabbit hole.
Well, if you have updates you'd like to share with us or something, please let us know. And please email back my wife if you find out that YouTube actually took down
How can in our world people take down videos? of no matter, I mean, I get it. These are data. This is stats. I don't.
Well, look at the Bakersfield docs. They got their videos taken.
I'm just making the point one more time.
And this was, it's very frustrating as a scientist that this is happening because I was upfront about my approach. I gave links to all my data. All I did was suggest something that could be investigated.
Now you're in trouble.
The number one thing I see when my listeners share it on Facebook is that the thumbnail picture from your presentation, you put accidentally 2018 on the front.
Oh, I know. That's
the number one criticism I get is that.
Yeah. Big deal.
I'm bad at those kind of things, right? And, but I presented it to 200 plus people. Nobody caught it there. It went through a handful of people before I posted. Nobody caught it there. But those aren't the kind of things you would pay attention to right of the day, except for once it gets posted.
And it was like, oh, how can I trust her? She can't get the date right. I'm like, oh, come on.
Right.
Hey, Dr. Knott, thank you for doing this. Thank you for being out there. And it's just the politics of this is why you're going to get hammered. So I'm sorry.
Oh, well. Thanks very much for having me on. At least I had the opportunity to convey my message to other people.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Come back to Tucson sometime again.
Yeah, please come back to Tucson.
I do, yeah.
All right. Let us know when you hear a great Mexican lunch on me, okay?
All right. I really look forward to that. Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you, bye-bye. Dr. Knott. Sean McCluskey, when we come back, we're gonna head over to the old Chris and Sean pinata pen on one of our favorite pinatas, the Bang On.
I wanted to tell her she's taken fire, so she's over the target.
Yes, correct.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. They can't stand it, can they? Stand facts.
If you two pulled her video.
Yeah. Is bull.
She's over the target.
All right. Sean McCluskey and I are going to do a love tap to the Joseph Morgan and the Winchester crew. Wake up. This is Wake Up Tucson at its best, right? Sean and I have this serious discussion with Anne-Marie Knott, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we follow it up with Cherry Pie by Warren.
Yeah, that's how we do it. It's Friday and we're almost done. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was noticing something on social media real quick. It's there's no social distancing going on in Minnesota. And if there's not a huge outbreak of COVID-19 in 2 weeks in Minnesota, can we just go back to normal?
Correct. Correct. Actually, I think 20% of the protesters are there so they can get out of quarantine.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. I can go hang out on the edge of this, these people blowing up a Target, and I can get out of the house and get some fresh air, I think.
Also, the weather is nice. The weather's cooperating. It's not like, 32 degrees in Minnesota. Right?
You're correct. So what's really amazing, I was just talking to Elsa across the hall, is from 7 feet away, that... If YouTube really pulled her video, the doctors in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
This is a university professor on the university website getting her stuff pulled down, then
we got a problem,
this
America.
This just gets weirder.
We got a problem, America. When you don't like the data, so you take it down from the world, we got a problem, America.
Sean, why did you remind me of the Joseph Morgan column about sales tax?
Because Facebook reminded me of that.
So and Facebook did something
I
good,
share.
I think?
Maybe. I mean, well, we got the beat on him for a little bit, so that's okay. It just proved that he's the wrong guy for the job. Everything that, unless you agree with the Pima County Board of Supervisors, the three that always vote the wrong way and do more damage than good to Pima County. If you believe in those three, then... Little Joey is the guy for you, but he wrote an article in support of his cousin. What was it, 2 or 3 years ago when he was running? And
John Winchester.
Yes, thank you. I didn't want to say it.
Why?
But John was running, and there's Joseph helping him, and then Joseph writes this article, and it's just basically everything that's wrong with Pima County, he supports. That's not somebody I want to be elected as an elected official to represent me. And if you live in CD2, don't make that mistake.
He, because remember, he keeps saying he's the conservative pick for Congress. Those conservatives.
No, he is the government spendthrift. That's what he says in his article.
Right, but he does advocate for the Huckleberry, Elias at the time, Valadez, and Bronson to get more money through a tax, extra tax, because they haven't fixed the road for 20 years. Is that, I just want to make sure I got that right.
That is correct. And if you improperly spend what you should have spent it on, that's not a need for a tax. That's a need for new leadership.
Sean, in that race right now, we have Joey Morgan, Brandon Martin, and Eric Rudin. Give me the McCluskey horse handicapping on that one.
Morgan hurts Martin, and Martin isn't close enough to touch anybody else. So it's a one-man race. It's going to be, I don't know, 60-30-10?
And, of course, Eric is,
Eric Rudin's going to definitely win this. He's got the most money. He's got the most name ID. He has, even though Brandon Martin's run again, and he's picking up speed right now, but I think it's a little too late, and I don't know if anybody in a district that big in an 8-week quarantine can get out in front of enough voters unless you're getting some sort of YouTube, Hulu, or Facebook ad, or radio play, because the people that are working are still listening to the radios or driving around town, so they're hearing Eric's ad. I'm not hearing anybody else's ad. I didn't even know Joseph was still running because he had blocked me. And thankfully, Facebook brought it back up, and I sent it and tagged you in it, I believe. And then we found out that he was still running. But he doesn't have the leadership to run. I don't think he has any money. And with no money, you're not going to win. This is a $1 million race just to get started. And that's a lot of fundraising phone calls. Now, if you're smart, you've got 6 or 7 people on your team. And I know Eric does, and Eric's got people calling for him, raising dollars every single day.
And Eric was identified as a young gun by the NRCC, so he's getting that support also.
Correct, because he's raising the money, that's how you get the young gun support.
Tell me about District 1 Pima County Supervisor. I still have 4 people in this race. What's your? Give me a breakdown on that.
I honestly still think it's going to be Williams or Beard, and it's one or the other. I think Beard is doing more social media stuff more. I get more of his stuff. I get more stuff through him, through Facebook, through emails, through everything I see his name. I didn't know there were 2 other people running other than Vic and Bill.
And Vic seems to I thought for the last 60 days, literally has fallen off the map. I haven't seen anything from him.
I've seen a couple of posts, but then again, you know, when you're on quarantine and lockdown, what can you do?
Right. So,
I would not want to be a political I would not want to have political aspirations during this lockdown.
And one last thing. Are there any chances of any of the D's running against D's in primaries to come out? Well, not the Richard Aaliyah. So give me the 3 D primaries. Give me. We only got about a minute and a half. Give me that real quick. The 3 Democrat primaries for supervisor.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think you're going to have any.
Gotcha.
It's going to be standard top politics. Who's going to come out and challenge any one of the 2? Bronson is the most likely person to challenge, but her district is so damn big. I don't see it happening. And if she decides to run, then she'll still be there. But if she decides not to run and it's an open seat, which would be interesting, but I don't think she's...
Well, she's running. She's running. She's
running. Yeah, I know. But just if she all of a sudden got tired and said she wanted to quit, and that would be the likelihood of somebody coming, that would be a 4-person melee. But again, that district's huge.
Sean, thanks for all that you do. Remember, for what Sean does, Rincon Ventures, property management, and, of course, traditional great real estate services, buy, sell real estate. Sean's the man.
Thanks, sir. Have a great weekend.
RVRTO.com to connect with Sean. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too. When we come back on Monday, we got Fernando Gonzalez running for supervisor and brother Joe. Zach's coming up on Tipping Point. Buckmaster has Mike Ortega, where Mike's going to talk about how his own counsel ignored him on
and
how
Sarah,
to use the
Sarah
manager.
Will be on.
She's she's a tough questioner, that one.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who made the show wonderful today. Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform. We had an amazing discussion with Ben from Divine Bovine. We found out about Ed's Magic Mushroom tie-dye shirt is now for sale.
Yes.
So we got
to
get
how to make the world's best burger.
And how to make your
home.
Own burgers at home, which is tell the butcher to grind your meat fresh. Number 2, make sure you season it. And number 3, make sure you throw it in the fridge for a couple hours after you make the patties before you put it on the grill. That's what we learned today. And then Dr. Knott was amazing, and she talked about how 70 to 80% of people probably have a natural immunity to COVID-19. And she just got her university video just got taken off a website, off of YouTube.